You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
I'm deeply grateful to Rav David Solomon for inviting me once again to come to speak to all of you. I want to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Mitzman, who films this not only for the shul and for the local website, but also for TorahAnytime.com. And really, what goes on here literally is seen around the world. So it's a tremendous chus for all of us that we get together, because this is an opportunity for people who don't have the achilas to come to a shir like this, really to see it, whether it's in Australia or in Chile and Mexico and Switzerland. Wherever I go, people tell me that they see these things on TorahAnytime.com. We've decided tonight to speak on a very, very interesting, unusual topic. And that is the topic of being tied to the past so that we could be connected to the future. Being tied to the past so that we could be connected to the future. And the way this whole topic developed was a number of years ago, back in 2003, which is more than 10 years ago, a friend of mine, Eli Slomowitz, asked me if I would lead a trip to Lithuania and Poland. And what he wanted to do was to go to places such as Vilna and to go to places such as Radin and Baranovich. And the truth is that at that time, just like all of us, we grow up in the yeshiva and we hear these places. Who could ever imagine that people in our generation would walk in these places? The Vilna Gaon walked in Vilna, the Rabbi Hanan walked in Baranovich, you know, and the Rebbe Elimelech walked in Lezhensk. How would we even dream to come to these type of places? But I told him that it would take me at least a year to prepare. I would love to go to hear somebody else speak, but if they want me to do it, I need a full year to prepare. And in 2003, we went to Lithuania, and then the next year to Lithuania and Poland. And Baruch Hashem, kamat, every single year, we've gone to different places. More recently, there's a fellow, Ari Sharf, who runs Project Masora. And he asked me to take a group of people over the years. We've done it many times, Baruch Hashem, to Poland. And that's basically what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about what it is to go to Poland. And hopefully, all of us together, by the time we finish tonight, you'll mamish experience what it is to be on a moving, literally life-changing journey to go to Poland. Rav Shach once said, a Yid that is not tied to the past has no hope of being connected to the future. We have a legacy. We have avos. We have grandfathers, great-grandfathers, great-grandmothers. And this is really what the legacy of Klal Yisrael is all about. And that's what Rav Shach was saying. If you're a Yid, if it's tied to the past, so then we can be connected to the future. And the way I looked at this trip, literally from the very first time, was to make the trip, Hu Haya Omer, Hu Haya Oseh. I was not interested in facts and statistics, how many people lived here, how many people died here, and even when we went to the concentration camps, that's not what I was interested in. I was interested in Lebedik Torah that we could learn that would change us and that would inspire us. And so in every place that we went, especially as we're going to talk tonight about Poland, in each place where a Godel had a connection, whether it was a yeshiva, whether it's a kever or a beis hakneses, I spoke about Hu Haya Omer, Hu Haya Oseh. This is what he said and this is what he did. And so in Warsaw, which was in Poland, that's where the Netziv and Rab Chaim Soloveitchik are buried. And even though basically they lived most of their lives in Lithuania, we'll find out in a few minutes how they happened to end up in Warsaw and why they were buried there. The Chiddush Yerim in Ger, this is from Poland, the Sfas Emes, Rab Meir Shapiro in Lublin, the Choyze of Lublin, the Ramah, who's buried in Krakow, the Tosfos Yontef, who's buried in that cemetery right where the Ramah is buried, Rab Menachem Zemba, the very sad story in the Warsaw Ghetto, Sora Schneer. And then personally, there's a certain Choshev Amoyel Rav Koppel, who has the most unusual matzeva, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. But every year when we go to this tremendous Beis Olam, it's probably the biggest one in Europe. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are buried there in Warsaw. As you're walking towards the path, to go to Rav Chaim the Netziv, you pass a certain Moyel's Kever, and they have a remarkable type of Kisei Shel Eliyahu that's the monument, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But first, let's talk about the Netziv. The Netziv was born in 1817, and he died in 1893. He was 76 years old. At 14, he married a woman by the name of Reina, who was the daughter of Rabbi Itzel of Volozhiner. So in a sense, he was a grandson, in a sense, because his wife was the granddaughter of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. Now, even Rabbi Itzel of Volozhiner, that means the Netziv's father-in-law, didn't realize what kind of great Talmud Chacham his son-in-law was. He knew he was a Masmid, and he knew he was a Talmud Chacham, but to be on such a high level, even he didn't realize it. And one day, he comes into the room where the Netziv is learning, and he picks up a letter from the Radal. The Radal was Rab David Luria, who wrote on Pirkei de Rabbi Eleza. And he sees how the Radal is writing to the Netziv with all kinds of titles and all kinds of shvachim and praises on his Torah, and he tries to understand the letters that are going back between the Radal and the Netziv, and he can't understand them. You see, they're so deep in learning, and that's when he first began to realize what kind of special son-in-law he had. Now, it's very interesting. There's a wonderful book that came out recently, and it brings the speeches of Rav Freifeld. And the title of the book is called In Search of Greatness. And in there, Rav Freifeld writes something. He said something in a drasha once that should really give us tremendous encouragement with our children and our grandchildren, because we're going to see something very special here, that he would say this in public and something that we could learn from. He writes that the first time that he met the Chazon Ish, he was so frightened, Rav Freifeld writes, that he couldn't even speak. He couldn't even talk. He was so overwhelmed to be in the presence of the Gadol HaDor, the Chazon Ish. But he said he may not have spoken, but the Chazon Ish spoke to him. And the Chazon Ish said to him, I want you to know that the Gedolim of previous generations were not necessarily geniuses. There were many people, and Rav Freifeld brings three people, that all of us are nispar from their Torah. But he said that's what the Chazon Ish was talking about, that the Gedolim, they had Yegiyah, as you'll see in a second how he explains it. But he says the Netziv was not a genius. And then he writes Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was not a genius. And he writes even the Tzoyis HaChoshen, could you believe, was not a genius. And he writes, you don't have to be a genius to become a Gadol in the Chochmah of Torah. And he says you need the four D's. And this is very important to remember in every aspect of life, and especially in Limud HaTorah. You need desire, dedication, drive, and determination. If you have these four things, no matter what you tackle in life, you're going to be successful. And it's the same thing in Limud HaTorah. A person doesn't have to be a genius, but if a person has that desire to know Shas, and he has that dedication, he's ready to commit to the time and the effort that it takes, and the drive and the determination in anything that you want to do in life, you have these four D's, you're going to be successful. And that's exactly what the Netziv had, that's what Rabbi Chanan had, that's what the Tzeis HaChoshen had, and that's what, when we see these Gedolim, and as the Chazon Ish says, they weren't geniuses, so any of us, if we strive hard enough, who knows how much we could accomplish? And that's what we have to tell our children. And also, if our children are not the brightest, that doesn't mean that they can't be very successful and be Gedolei Olam and be accomplished people. It's not the brain power. It's the determination power. It's the desire. How much a person is going to throw himself into a project and therefore be able to accomplish it. Now, an amazing thing happens. In 1849, Rabbi Itzel of Volozhiner, who was the second Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, the first was Rabbi Chaim, of course. Rabbi Itzel took over, and then he died. So his son-in-law, his name was Rabbi Loza Yitzchok Fried, he took over. He was now the new Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. But unfortunately, he was a very sick man, and 4 years later, he was nifter. So now, Sigvarna Machlaikis in the yeshiva. Who should be the Rosh Yeshiva? Who should be the new Rosh Yeshiva? One, the choice was the Beis HaLevi, and the other was the Netziv. The Beis HaLevi and the Netziv had different ways of approaching Shas, different ways of approaching Liman HaTorah, and each one had a chelik in the Beis Medrash that loved them. And for 4 years, this went on. 4 years of machlokes in the yeshiva. I remember one time I spoke to Rav Gifter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he told me that in certain yeshivas, he taught me a word. I didn't even know the existence of the word. Maybe it's a Polish word. I don't know if it's a Yiddish word. I don't think it is. He said, in Tells, Amolot Megahat Ahopka. Ahopka was like a revolution. There were Bacharim that made certain revolutions. I don't want to explain how they did what they did. I don't want people in other yeshivas to start doing some of these things. But whatever it is, you know, these boys had a very strong opinion about what the policies of the yeshiva should be. So now, in Volozhin, 4 years, they couldn't decide. Finally, they decided they're going to bring four Dayonim together. Now, the second you hear that they brought four Dayonim, you know that it's not a Din Torah, because a Din Torah has to have an odd number of people. So like this, would you be able to decide? One side will have either two or one, however, 21, whatever. It has to be an odd number. But they had four Dayonim, and each one of these people was going to, together, they would try to figure out who should be the Rosh Hashiva. So the first one of these four was Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector at that time, he was a young man, he wasn't yet the Rav in Kovna, he was in the Vardik. The second was Rabbi David Tevel of Minsk, who wrote the Nachlas David. The third one was Rabbi Yosef Femer of Slutsk, Rabbi Yosel of Slutsker, and then the fourth one was Rabbi Wolf or Rabbi Zev Landau of Amagat of Vilna. Now, as they sat down to decide this, the Maggid of Vilna made one of the most classic statements. And every time we talk about the Netziv, I try to bring this up because it's mamish beautiful how he said. He said, you know, Rabbi Isai, he's talking now to the other three Chashuvim, the Talmid Chachamim, that they're going to decide. He said, I feel like we're in Parshas Vayeshev. And they look at him, what does that mean? He said, you know, if you take a look in the Torah, there's the good guy and the bad guy in every single parsha until Vayeshev. In Bereshis, you have the Tzaddik, you have Hevel, and then you have the Rosha, you have Kayin. In the next parsha, you have Noach, the Tzaddik, and then you have the Dor HaMabul. In the next parsha, you have Avram, and then you have Terach, over the Avodah Zarah. In the next parsha, then you have Yitzchak, and then you have Yishmael. In the next parsha, you have Yaakov, and then you have Esav. But look what happens in Vayeshev. There's a machloikis. People aren't getting along, but they're all tzaddikim. It's Yosef and his brothers. They're all tzaddikim. He said, Rabbi Yisrael was sitting here in Pasha's Vayeshev. Nobody could say anything bad against the Netziv, and nobody could say anything bad against the Beis HaLevi. So this is Vayeshev. We have to decide among these Halig Yidden who's going to be the Rosh Hashiva. And it's interesting what they decided. And you'll see what happened. They decided that there were going to be co-Rosh Hashivas, two Rosh Hashivas. But you know that that can't work out, especially since the Netziv was in charge of the money. And whoever is in charge of the money, he's the one who runs the show. And he's the one who's going to have the last day. So it only lasted a little while. And the Beis HaLevi, of course, he gave shiurim for a little while. But after 4 years, he left. He went to Slutsk. Eventually, he went to Brisk. And he became the Rav there in Brisk, and that's why he's known, the Beis HaLevi is known as the Brisk Rav. And the Netziv actually led the Volozhin Yeshiva, it's hard to imagine, from 1854 to 1892, he led it for 38 years. Now I want to tell you an amazing story that happened with the Netziv and a Bochur in the Yeshiva. You know, in those days, there was the only place for a boy to be, was in the Yeshiva. And if a boy was a bad boy, a boy was interested in culture and haskalah and things like that, and a brilliant kid, sometimes he would come to the yeshiva and he would make tzaras. Now today, there are a lot of other places that a person can go, but there was no other place that a person could hang out, a brilliant kid who wanted to make tzaras. So there was this boy in Volozhin who was out to get his Rebbe, the Rosh Hashiva. And listen what he did. He was a fabulous artist and a great forger. He could write your signature that you would look at it and say, this is my signature. Now, so what he did was, he took a letter, he wrote a letter, as if the Netziv is writing to all the people in Volozhin, and all the people in the area that everybody now should send money to Eretz Yisrael, but they should send it through Turkey. That there would be an emissary in Turkey who would be able to get the money, and then they would send it to Eretz Yisrael. Now that was illegal. The Russian government did not look favorably at anybody who was going to send money to Eretz Yisrael. And now the Rosh Hashiva is writing such a letter, and this Heverman goes to the authorities and says, look what my rabbi's doing. He's going against the government. This is terrible. So, of course, they couldn't wait to arrest the Nativ, and they arrested him. And they took him into the police station, and they said, what kind of letter is this? He said, what are you talking about? He says, look, this is not your handwriting? He takes a look at it. He can't believe it. It's his exact handwriting. He says, this is my handwriting, but I didn't write it. You know, what does that mean? Take a look at the signature. He says, you know, this is my signature. But then the most incredible thing happened. The Nitziv, for whatever reason, and you could think about why he did this, his name was Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. That's how the word Nitziv comes. Naftali Nun Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. Now, when he signed his name, you have to get a book on the Nitziv. You get a biography, or you get a biography of Gedolim, and they always have the Nitziv's picture with his Gegreizel Tepeyas, and they have his signature. You'll notice the most amazing thing. The word Tzvi ends with a Yud. The word Yehuda begins with a Yud. Every single time the Nitziv signed his name, he used only one Yud. He didn't write two Yuds next to each other. And this forger didn't pick it up. This forger, he just saw the Nitziv signature, so he wrote Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin with two Yuds. Now, the Nitziv wrote many Shilas and Tshuvas. He said, let me get my Shilas and Tshuvas, I'm going to show you something. And he showed the authorities that not one time ever in the Tshuvas, when he wrote his name, did he put the two Yuds together. And he was free, and he was safe. Now, why didn't he put the two Yuds together? Now, it could be, I would think, although I have no proof, that maybe because in the Siddurim we have the two Yuds, it's a remez to a Shem Hashem, it's not actually a Shem Hashem, so he didn't want in his signature that there should be two Yuds next to each other. That could be a reason. But whatever it is, that's what saved him when he picked that up. Now, there's one more thing that I think is very, very important, and I find incredibly, incredibly inspirational. And this is a vort that the Nitziv writes. In the Gemara Megillah, Chav Zayin Amud Beis, we all want to live long. Everybody wants to live long, right? I mean, yesterday was my birthday, Tu B'Shvat. You know, everybody's calling, you know, you should live to be 120. It's great to get everybody's brachas, right? Everybody wants to live long. So now the Gemara tells us how to live long. The only problem is it gives you 28 ways how to do it. How are you going to pick? What are you supposed to pick? So the Gemara starts out, I'm not going to go through all 28, but they said to Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua, "B'maharach t'yamim, how did you live long?" He said, I'll tell you what I did. Miyomai lo yosisi kapandria lo beis haknesses. I never made a shortcut through the shul. In other words, if I came from the parking lot and I had to come down here to hear the shir, I didn't walk through the shul. If I daven ma'ariv, you know, if I have a right to be there. But to make the shul a parking shortcut to go through, or if it's freezing and I'm going to go from, you know, 13th Avenue, I'm going to Bobov, you know, to 14th Avenue, I'll just walk through Bobov so I'll be warm, and you're not davening there, you're not allowed to do that. He says, I never did that. That's how I lived long. Okay. Then somebody asked B'maharachta Yomim. They asked Rav Preda. Listen to what he said. He said, Miyomai loikidmani. Never did it happen. Loikidmani odon lebeis hamedrash. Nobody ever came to shul first before me. I was there first every single day. That's how he lived long. That's what he said. And it goes on and on, 28 different ways. And then another one said, Shalom Tamidim es Rab Zeira. They asked Rab Zeira, how'd you live long? He said, Miyomai lo hikbarati b'soich beisai. Basically, I never got angry in my house. Imagine that. That's a great midah that we could learn, right? He never got angry, and he said, that's why I lived long. So now the Shaila is, when I learned this Gemara, so everybody wants to live long, right? So what are you supposed to do? How do you pick out? How do you pick out one of these 28 things? Is one better than the other? So I remember I was once discussing this with Rabbi Yecheskel Monk, he should live and be well. He was one of the Ramim in Tells in Cleveland. And He told me something. He said like this. He said, take a look at the Hamigdova, the Netziv, in Bamidbar Tezvov Memalef, in Parshat Tzitzis. At the end of Parshat Tzitzis, the Netziv goes off on a tangent and he gives us a great insight into life. And he says like this, She'ein hiluch avodas Hashem b'tmidus shel kol b'nei adam shavim. Not everybody serves Hashem the same way. Some sit and learn a whole day. Others daven a great deal. Others are involved in gemilas chasadim. V'kol l'shem shemayim. Everybody does l'shem shemayim. Everybody wants to feel a connection to Hashem. Some of us through learning, some of us through chesed, some of us through tefillah. And he says, even in learning, some are bekiyas, some are iyun. And he says like this. He says, even in mitzvahs, there are some people that have like a favorite mitzvah. They feel very close to tzitzis, to Shabbos, to sukkah. But there's certain people that have a certain chavivus. Everybody serves Hashem in a different way. And he says like this. He brings a Yerushalmi in Kedushin. Kol ha'oseh mitzvah achas. Anybody who does one mitzvah, okay? Meitivin loy umarichin lo yomov. Hashem is going to give him good things in this world, and he'll have long life. Omer Rabbi Yosi, says, "Mi sheyiched loy mitzvah, v'loy avar aleha mi'olam." In other words, he makes this mitzvah something that he will never, ever fail to do. And that's what Rav Monk told me. That's the pshat and the netziv. What is the common denominator of all these 28? You know what? Every single one of the 28, you know what they said? Miyomai, all my days. In other words, it made no difference whether he didn't make a shortcut in shul, or he didn't get angry, or nobody came first. It was that consistency. Once tonight, we think about, what should I do that from tonight on, I will never, ever fail to do this. That's how you live long. That's miyomai. Now listen to this Sefer Chassidim. It's absolutely incredible. Simen Reish Yud. Im ro'isa Talmud Chacham. If you see a Talmud Chacham that living long, you should know, because he undertook something more than his friends that doesn't say even in the Torah. It doesn't say any place in the Torah you got to be the first one to come to shul. It doesn't say any place in the Torah that you can't make a shortcut through a shul. Sha'rei b'feirish omer b'masechta Megillah b'maharach l'yomim. Rabbi Yehuda Chosid says we have the Gemara b'maharach l'yomim. How do you live long? Ve'ein shum davar echad min haTorah. Not one of those things is min haTorah. How do you like that? So when I had to speak at Rav Scheinberg's 100th birthday, they made a dinner for him, and we all know he lived 100 years old, right? How did he live so long? So you know what I said? I believe it's because he undertook that mitzvah of tzitzis. Now there's no way that it's a deraisa to wear 80 pairs of tzitzis or 60, whatever he wore. You know how I know it's not a deraisa? Because Rabbi Eliashiv would have done it. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman would have done it. Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky would do it. Nobody did it. He did it. But that was his zahiris that he did every single day. He never failed. That's why he lived long. That's the pshat in the Gemara. So tonight, if let's say you undertake, from tonight on, I will not go to sleep before I do a chesed for another yid. Every day from tonight on, or tomorrow the latest, I will not go to sleep until I do a chesed for someone. Or from now on, I will never, ever bench without a sitter or without a bench roll. It doesn't say in the Torah you have to bench in a sitter. It doesn't say you have to do a chesed every day. But if you undertake something, miyomai, that's how a person can live long. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's what the Netziv is teaching us. And that's the purpose of coming on a trip like this. To hear something like this, and wait a second. Hey, wait a second. I can change. I can grow. Rav Freifeld is telling us you don't have to be a genius to be a gadol. You got to have that drive and determination. I can do that. Why not? The Netziv is telling us that we can all live long. We have to do, it's not a deraisa that you have to undertake. You have to take a midat toiva. Avada, if you take on a derisus, that's great. Why not? But even a midat toiva, that's something that you're always going to undertake. Now, what happens is very interesting. And it's important to know this. That Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, right? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, whose father was the Beis HaLevi, he became the Rosh Yeshiva together with the Netziv. The Netziv and the Beis HaLevi got along very well. They just parted. They said, listen, you know, obviously you're going to take over the Yeshiva, then it's yours. I'll go to Brisk, you know, at Slutsk and then Brisk. But his son, Reb Chaim, he married the Netziv's granddaughter. So this was a Zayda. Could you imagine a Zayda and a grandson? When I think about my grandchildren, I'm thinking, wow, imagine we ran a yeshiva together. Wouldn't that be great? Imagine you're running a yeshiva with your grandson, your granddaughter's husband. That's unbelievable. And so they ran the yeshiva for many, many years together. Rav Chaim lived to be only 65 years old. And those years that they ran the yeshiva, it was just incredible. I'll tell you something very interesting. You know who the Talmidim were when they ran the yeshiva together. Listen to the people who learned of Elazar in the time when Rav Chaim and the Netziv were there together. Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz, Rav Avram Doiv Ber Kahana, that was the Dvar Avram, Rav Yehuda Leib Chasman, who was the Mashgiach in Chevron, Rav Chaim Moshe Grzinski, Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, Rav Ochanan Wasserman, Rav Elezer Silver, Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, Rav Zelig Reuven Bengis, could you believe this Talmidim, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Rav Shiva Slabotka? It's amazing. That was the heyday of the yeshiva when Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and the Netziv, when they ran the yeshiva together. Now, just to tell you a little bit about Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim really, he lived in Brisk, but Nebuchadnezzar, there was a war there and he had to get out. So he came to Warsaw. And when he was in Warsaw, Nebuchadnezzar, he passed away. And he was buried there. The Netziv also wanted to go, well, after 1892 when the yeshiva was closed. And it was closed because they wanted to put in many, many hours of Lamudei Chol. And he said, that's not a yeshiva. You know, the Eibishter will have to find another place where they're going to learn Torah. I cannot have in my yeshiva that they're learning Lamudei Chol in the morning. And so therefore they would close the yeshiva. To me, one of the saddest things that I ever read in my research was that after the Volozhiny yeshiva was closed, they found footsteps in the morning, in the snow. Who was going to Volozhin at night? It was closed. And then people stood out, I guess, in the field someplace just to watch who's going to the yeshiva at night. And they noticed that it was the Netziv. He would go there and he would cry against the building of Volozhin, and he would say Tikkun Chatzos. That's who was going there every night. That was his Beis HaMikdash that was destroyed. So touching, such a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the Netziv, the yeshiva owed a lot of money, and he felt he can't go to Eretz Yisrael until he pays his debts. And many, many people were asking him all kinds of shailas. He just couldn't get out of Warsaw. So Nebuch, he died there, and he's buried there, and he's buried right next to Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Now, who was Rav Chaim? We all know Rav Chaim changed the way people learn, but people don't really realize that he was such a great Baal Chesed. On the Kever, it says about his Chesed, Harava Chesed. Do you know that when they used to pay him his salary, if any oni was there, he would give it out. He would give it out. After a while, they stopped giving it to him. They gave it to his wife because she never got the money. His house was like a Rishus HaRabim. His house, people would come there, they would plant themselves there, they would sit there, they hung up signs, you know, what was going on in the city. It was like a free-for-all, and he didn't mind it. Now, I once saw a house like this. In Stamford Hill in England, there's a guy, Jackie Levinson. Now he already moved to Eretz Yisrael. But Jackie Levinson had a house that people, Meshalachim, would come there, and they would park themselves there for weeks and sometimes months. When I went into the kitchen, I saw that his wife had this huge institutional pot. And every day she was cooking for all the mashalachim that were there because in the daytime they couldn't go anyplace because everybody was out in the cities working. So they sat there and they learned and, you know, there was a lot of tables in the living room and beds all over the place and svarim all over the place. So I once heard a great story. That it was at night and a bunch of these mashalachim and Jackie Levinson, they're all sitting around the table. Nobody knows anybody. And one guy says, how long are you here? He says, I'm here 2 weeks. Turns to another guy at the table. He says, how long are you here? He says, I'm here 4 months. Another guy turns to Jackie Levinson. He doesn't know it's his house. He says, how long are you here? He says, I'm here 30 years. He said, das ist eine chutzpah. Now, Rav Chaim became the Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin in 1880. And for 12 years, they had these great, great Talmidim. Now, it's interesting. Just some fascinating things about Rav Chaim. If you gave a Sefer to Rav Chaim, and he read the first 20 pages of the Sefer, and he began to understand how the man who wrote the Sefer thinks, You could ask him any shaila that's in the rest of the sefer, any pshat in the Gemara, he'll tell you how that man answered the pshat in the Gemara, answered the pshat in the Tosfos, because he understood already. He was able to pick up a person's way of thinking. Somebody once said to him, there's a Tosfos that says this. He said, it's impossible. There's no such Tosfos. And they looked all around for hours to try to find it. They couldn't find it. They said, to Rav Chaim Rashiwi, you're such a bucky. You knew that there's no such Tosfos? He said, no, I don't know all the Tosfos in. I just know logically there couldn't be such a Tosfos. He understood logically, it just didn't make sense. So I'll tell you an amazing thing. This is absolutely incredible. And I want to tell you where it is, because nobody's going to believe what Rav Chaim answered to this question. So I just want to tell you, it's in a sefer called Shimusha Shel Torah. Rav Bergman wrote it. It's on page 201. You could look it up. There was a man in Brisk who gave a lot of tzedakah. He was a very wealthy man. Purim, he had many, many people that came to his house. And everybody loved him. And then Nebuch, he lost his money. And nobody could believe it. The man was such a gentle soul. He was such a good person. He gave to everyone. How could the Eibishter make it that he lost his money? Nobody could understand it. And so they went to Rav Chaim and they asked him, listen to what he said. He said, life is a university. It's hard to believe that he spoke about college, but this is what he said. Life is a university. He said, imagine a father sends his son to a college, and he passes a certain course. It's a very, very difficult course, but the semester is over. And then the next semester starts. So then he's got to pass that second course, and no matter what he got in the first course, there's no difference. He's got to follow the second course and get a good mark. He said, that's what life is. This man passed the course of Ashiras. Now the Eibishter is giving him a course of Anius. It's not that Hashem is angry at him. This is how a person is built, by going through certain nisyonos and passing the course. Of course he passed the course of Ashiras. We all know he was a great person. He gave tzedakah. But that was the course. Now we're in intercession. Now he is going to take a new course. And they used to give him the course of Anius. So if somebody is going through Anius or Dachus, he shouldn't feel that Hashem is angry at him. That's the nisyon that he has right now. It doesn't mean that it can't change. But a person has to be a maimon, a person still has to be able to give tzedakah, and a person still has to be upbeat in life, even if he's going through problems in parnasa. Now these are life-changing thoughts. These are thoughts that a person comes back from Poland and says, you know something? What Rav Chaim said makes sense. What Rav Chaim says is something that I could apply in my life. That's something that gives me chizuk. That's the person, that's the reason to go to places such as this. I'll just tell you one more thing that's light, and then we'll get to the serious part of the talk. When we go towards Rav Chaim and the Nativ, as I told you before, there's a remarkable, very tall monument, a tall matzeva that's shaped like a kisei shel aliyo. It's a bench, and then it has psukim about bris milah. And on top, it has two famous psukim that we say every morning. Now, this is a pasuk that David HaMelech writes that describes what happened when the Yidden went out of Mitzrayim. They praised Hashem with their voices. And they had a double-edged sword. So Mepharshim say, the Gemara says, double-edged sword is bris milah because the knife is supposed to be sharp on both sides. So they put that on top of the Miles Kaber on the monument, on the Matzeva, and many people have a minig that the Mile is the one who davens Shachris. He's the Balfila the day of a bris. And if he's not the Balfila, but at least he says either this pasuk out loud or Bechori Samayah Bris. That's really the minig in Klal Yisrael. The Mile comes up and he says Bechori Samayah Bris, and then the Chazan, the Balfila, says the other part, and it goes back and forth, and the Tzibur follows along. In Yedusha Kehillas, they go all the way till the end of Oz Yashir. But in other kehillas, they just do just the Bechori Samayah Bris. So I showed the people this, and I told them, Baruch Haba, what it means, Haba is Hinei, Bo Eliyahu. That's what Haba stands for. Not only that you're welcoming the child, but you're welcoming Eliyahu. And Haba is Hei, Beis, Aleph, which is eighth. You do a bris on the eighth day. So Baruch, blessed is the child who now comes in on the eighth day. But then I told them an amazing story, which was a lead-in for the rest of the trip. This story happened a couple years ago in Flatbush. Rav Hillel David was Adabris and the great-grandfather. This was his first great-grandson that was now having a bris, and he was a survivor, a Holocaust survivor. So Rabbi Hillel David went over to him and said, you know,
it must be so special for you that you are zoicha to see a great-grandson. He said, Rebbe, what are you talking about? I never thought I'd get married. I never thought I'd survive to have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That's, to me, that's just incredible. That's just absolutely incredible. So Rav Hillel David said to him, you know, I'll tell you something interesting. I remember something in my youth that there was Taka, a Holocaust survivor. And he grew up in Williamsburg. I mean, he came to the Williamsburg after the war. And every Friday night, Williamsburg is Baruch Hashem a very prolific community. Every Friday night, there were 10 Shalom Zachars. He went to every single one. He said, that's my nekama of Hitler. To see that how Hitler thought he was going to get rid of us. I don't have to eat and drink and have arbis at beer and any. I just want to see the kids. I just want to see the families that are growing and growing and growing. That's my nekama of against Hitler. That's what Rav David said to this great-grandfather who was now so proud that he had his first great-grandson. 2 days later, the great-grandfather calls his grandson and he says, I've got to tell you something that I thought of only because your Rebbe, Rav Hillel David, told me that story about the man in Williamsburg. And he told him this, and underline it tomorrow before you daven, you will never, ever forget it. I have it underlined in my siddur. Listen to this. We said, Klal Yisrael said, praise with their throats. V'cherev pepiyas biyodim. That's a symbol of bris milah. What's the next pasuk? Does anybody remember the next pasuk? Lasos nekama bagoyim. Isn't that incredible? It's incredible. He said, I never would have thought about it. But after it says, v'cherev pepiyas biyodim, the next pasuk is lasos nekama bagoyim. That's the biggest nekama. That's what that guy was doing. Seeing Yiddish Kinderlach being born, that's the greatest nekama against Hitler. So now, again, you come home from a trip like this, all of a sudden there's a new pshat in davening. You underline it in your siddur. And then all of a sudden the davening means something completely different. Now, in Warsaw, where we started the first day, we go to a place that's called an Umschlagplatz. Now, it looks like a very simple place. What it is a train station that is no longer a train station. It used to be a train station. Hundreds of thousands of Yidden were taken to this train station in Warsaw, and from there they went to concentration camps. Treblinka, all these other places where they went to, where they were sent from this place. And somebody wanted to make a memorial at this train station because the Germans and the Polish people, they wanted to try to wipe out as much as possible. You cannot find any building that exists from the Warsaw Ghetto. They got rid of it all. They don't want anybody, there should be a zecha for it. So somebody came up with a brilliant idea to make a wall. And what on this wall, all it is, it's a tall white wall. You could see it on Google. You'll look it up. You'll see Umschlagplatz. There are names. There are names of every single person that was in those train stations, because the Germans, Yimach Shemam, they kept a record. Now, it doesn't mean that there were 300,000 names there, no. But if there was a woman, Rachel, who was there, so Rachel is written on that wall. If there was somebody, mayor, there could have been 1,000 mayors over the years, over those years when the Yidden were in the train. Every name that somebody had is written on that wall. Now, the people come there, and I tell them as follows. I said that I remember when I was writing the Bris Milah Sefer for Art Scroll. It was the first thing that I had written for them, and one of my favorite parts was about names. And I told them that the Rebbe Rabbi Elimelech says that when you name a child, you have to be so careful how you name the child, because you make a connection from the neshama of the child to the neshama of the person who had that name. So the two neshamas are connected. So that's why you only want to have a connection to a good person, to somebody who was a tzaddik, somebody who had mazel, somebody who lived a positive life. Because the name connects the two neshamas, the neshama of the person who had the name and the neshama of the baby. Now, in 1985, I was writing the book. In 1985, I didn't have a computer. So I took out the piece of paper from the typewriter, and I wanted to write the word neshama in Hebrew. And when I wrote it, I almost fainted. What are the two middle letters of the word neshama? Shame. That's incredible. The Rebbe of the Melech is telling us that through the name, the neshamas are connected. That means that if you carry the name Meir, or David, or Shmuel, or Shimon, or Pinchas, or whatever, or Rachel, or Sarah, or Chava, whatever, you are connected to every person that had that name. Now, I said to the people, find your name on the wall. What gave us the right to be born 70 years later than those people? That could have been us. And the way I know it could have been us is because your name is there. There's not one person here who doesn't have his name up there. Now, some of the names are spelled a little bit different with a J or an H. They're all in English. And some Yiddish names, people think first that their names are not there, but you find it. There was not one person on the trip, Kamat, that didn't find their name. Now, all of a sudden, it's a different wall. All of a sudden, people realize, wait a second. I have a connection to that person because we share the same name. We share that same spark, the nitzoitz of the person who originally had that name. And then all of a sudden, people start taking pictures of the names of all their children. Everybody wants to be remembered. Is it Chanoch? Is it Avram? Is it Yael? Is it Chaim? Yehuda? Avram? They're all there. That's frightening. And then when you say Tillam, oh, that's when it starts. That's when the crying begins. When you realize that it could have been us, and that the Eibishter gave us the opportunity, as we're going to hear at the very end, to live lives of Kiddush Hashem. They died al Kiddush Hashem. The Eibishter gave us the blessing to live 70 years later, to live al Kiddush Hashem. And that's when the trip begins to get extremely serious. The next morning, we go to Majdanek. Majdanek is one of the most painful concentration camps that you could ever be in. You know why? Because within 24 hours, they could get it going again. All the gas canisters, they're all there. They are all there. And you know something? It's not even 10 miles away from Lublin. And you have to wonder, what were the people thinking? They saw the smoke. They saw the smokestacks and the black smoke that's going up. Didn't anybody care? Didn't anybody do anything? No. Nobody cared. Because it was Yidden that were being burned. It was Yidden that were being killed and be sent to the crematoriums. And then I tell them, as we are about to go in, I want to give them a way how a person is supposed to focus before he goes into a concentration camp. And I tell them that Yaakov Avinu, when he realized that he was now going to see his son Yosef, after 22 years, the Pasuk tells us, in Bereishis Memhei Kovches, Vayomer Yisrael, Yaakov says, Rav, Rav, I have so much. Rav, Rashi says, Simcha v'chedva, I have so much joy, I'm going to see my son. Oy Yosef b'ni chai, my son is Yosef, he's alive. El chaverenu b'terem amos. Let me go see him before I die. That's a simple pshat in the pasuk. You know what the Medrash says? The Medrash doesn't teach Rav that way. Rav means an abundance. That's why a Rav is called a Rav, because he knows so much. Rav, the Medrash says, is like this. Rav, koicha shal Yosef, vayomer Yisrael, Yaakov says, Rav, Yosef is greater than me. He's much better than me. Shekama tzoris higiyu v'adayin ho'oymed b'tzidkoy. He had so much tzoris in his life. With his brothers, with Potiphar, with Potiphera, with Paroi, with the people in his jail. And yet, he was oymed b'tzidkoy. Oh, such a child. Let me go see him before I die. And I say to the people as we walk into these concentration camps, and we're going to see the barracks, let us remember that these people are greater than we could ever hope to be. They benched Chanukah licht, as you'll hear in a moment. Did it ever occur to anybody
that a fork has four prongs, and two forks have eight prongs. And these people at night, when no one was looking, would take some wax and put a little bit of cotton on two forks so they could have eight licht for Hanukkah.
They didn't eat, as we will see in a moment. They didn't eat chametz on Pesach. These people went through nisyonos, terrible. Of course, many people, Nebuch lost it. But those that were there, that's what we come to learn about. Rav, these people are greater than us. And we walk through these barracks, and we walk through these areas with a tremendous, tremendous amount of derech eretz. Now listen to this. Rav Matisyo writes this. It's so painful. But again, a life-changing lesson in life. Bereshis Memches Tezvov. The Pasuk tells us, Vayivorech es Yosef. Yaakov Avinu benched Yosef Vayim, and he said, Helekim asher hisalchu avoysai lefonov. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, who walked, who was before my forefathers, who led my forefathers, lefonov, Avram and Yitzchok, Helekim horoye oisi. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, the God that shepherded me, he led me. And Rav Matisyo asks, there's a Vov missing here in Roya. How would you spell Roya? Reish, Vov, Ayin, Hey. But here it's spelled Reish, Ayin, Hey, which symbolizes, or you could read it, Ra, bad. And Rav Matisyo gives us a great insight. V'ulai, perhaps. Loi bichdi hu shenichtav haroya choser Vov. Maybe it's not just coincidence. Of course it's not that a Vov is missing. To show us, Gedele Rames says sometimes something looks bad in life. We go through a tzara. We think it's the worst thing in the world. But the Eibishter is shepherding us. He's just leading us to what's going to be much better at the end. So we think we're going through tzaras. Horoya oisi. It's oisi ois ra. But really, it's roya. It's the shepherd that's taking care of us. And then I tell them the most amazing thing. And I give it to them, and I brought it for you. You cannot believe this tefillah that you will go home with tonight. This was a tefillah that was written Erev Pesach by somebody who realized that everybody in the barracks is going to have to eat chametz, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to live. Lefnei achilas chametz, the guy who writes the tefillah says, Yoyma bekavonas alev, before you eat chametz on Pesach, say this, Bekavonas Alev. Avinu Shebashamayim, Hine Golav Yadua Lefanecha. You know Sheritzoinenu Lasois Ritzoincha. You know that we want to do your will. Velochoi Geschag Apesach Bachilas Matzah Uveshmiras Isu Chometz. You know we want to eat matzah and be careful from Chometz. Ahalzois Doavolibenu. But our heart groans and feels terrible. Shahashibud ma'abe deisano. It's forcing us and it's getting, making us lost. Vanachnu nimtzoim b'sakonis nefoshes. And now we're b'sakonis nefoshes. Hinenu muchonim umuzumonim l'kayem mitzvoscha v'chay bohem. We're going to eat chometz. You know why? Because we want to do the mitzvah v'chay bohem. V'loi shiyomuz bohem. V'lizor. Be careful, watch your lives. You have to protect your life. That's why we daven to you. Imagine giving this out in the barracks and everybody having a tefillah, or one person actually probably reading it, so everybody should say it together. They're going to eat chametz, but they're doing the mitzvah of achai bohem. What should we say? What nisyonos do we have compared to what they had? That's the reason we go there. To put our lives in perspectives. So many times we think we're going through difficulties. But how could you compare to what they went through? And yet they write and say a tefillah like this. That's absolutely incredible. I want to tell you an amazing story. I had this chus to put something out that's called Living Lessons. I don't know many of the children saw it. It was something that we made for the Yom Nerayim, and we did it for Hanukkah. My son-in-law, my dear son-in-law, Hananya Kramer, who's a genius in CD-ROMs and multimedia, all kinds of presentations. So I told five stories in a studio, and then there were five, and he put it to music and animation. And we gave it, we had it sponsored. It cost over $30,000. Anybody wants to participate, you know, for the Pesach one, we're looking to do it for Pesach as well. But listen to this. We gave it to chinuch.org on Torah Mesorah. Between the Yom HaNarayim one and the Hanukkah one, they had over 10,500 downloads. That means 50,000 kids saw it. You could have a chalik and 50,000 kids seeing inspirational stories about Yontif. And I got letters from Melbourne, Australia, and from Miami, and from Montreal, and from all kinds of places in Spring Valley. Here, Rabbi Plotzker told me that his class watched it, and they saw the stories, and they stopped, and they analyzed it. It was absolutely incredible. So one of the stories that we had on Hanukkah was incredible. There was a man, his name was Rab Shmelka. Everybody called him Rab Shmelka, but he was Rab Shaya Schnitzler. Rab Shaya Schnitzler. And he was in the barracks, and he wanted to give chizuk to the people. And he told them, he said, we're going to be able to have Hanukkah licht. You'll see, we'll have Hanukkah licht on Hanukkah. And the people thought he was crazy. Where are you going to get Hanukkah licht in the barracks in Bergen-Belsen? It's impossible. He said, don't worry, you'll see, we'll have it. Now, he had a terrible job, a terrible, terrible job, which I did not explain on that Living Lessons DVD that we made for the kids, or put it on, like I say, chinuch.org, because it's too frightening. But all those that were gassed, he had to carry them out on trucks and on platforms and bring them to the crematorium. So every day he walked out with a whole group nebuch of dead people that he was bringing to the crematorium. Every day the same path. One day, as he's walking, he almost slips, and he can't understand, what do you mean slips? This is an even piece, and now all of a sudden, there's like a little pile that's higher in the ground. That means somebody buried something there. Who buried something here? So he thought that maybe he should check it out, but he didn't want to check it out in front of any of the guards, so he waits until he comes back, and he goes back, and he opens up that piece of earth that is now protruding like a little bump, like a little mound. And this is hard to believe, but he opens it up and he sees in there a little jug of oil. And as he digs further, he sees little wicks and then little cups. Now, to me, this is the best part of the story. I can't believe what he did. He covered it up and he left it there. You know why? Because he realized, obviously, some yid buried it. So if a yid somehow got it, and he buried it, so he should be able to use a Hanukkah. I'm going to take it away, so I should look like a hero. I can't get over that he did it, and he left it there. But every day he went out to see if it was still there. Chav Aleph Kislev, Chav Beis Kislev, Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet. It's now late afternoon. And he sees whoever that guy is, he's not coming. So he goes, and he takes it, and he brings it back to the barracks, and the people are going crazy. They cannot believe it. They're crying. How could this possibly be? Where did this come from? How could this be? And every night they lit Hanukkah licht. Rav Shmelka Schnitzler, who was later to be known as the Chabarov, he lit Hanukkah licht. Now, in April of 1945, they were liberated. He went to Hungary, and he came into this town of Chaba, and that's how he was known as the Chabarov. 1951, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He became everybody came to him for schoolers and for brachas. Eventually, he made his way to America, and he came to the Satmar Rebbe. Now, the reason that he went to the Satmar Rebbe was because the Satmar Rebbe was also in Bergen-Belsen. So they were explaining and they're exchanging experiences that they had. And then the Satmar Rebbe says like this. He says, you know, I always feel bad. So the Chabarov, Rav Schnitzel, says to him, why do you feel bad? He said, you know, I bribed a guard to let me hide some oil and let me hide some wicks. But I was liberated, Chof Aleph Kislev. So those wicks and that oil that I buried was never used. And Rav Schnitzler, Rav Shmelka says to him, Rebbe, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. You don't know how much chizuk you gave. You were the messenger to give so much chizuk to so many people. I found it and we used it. And every night of Hanukkah we used it, Rebbe, because you hid it. So many people had inspiration. And the Rebbe couldn't get over it. He says, how it's amazing how the Eibishter made another nest in Kislev with oil. And I put it on this Living Lessons, and thousands of kids saw it. And then a few weeks later, a guy who I know for years, I never put it together.
A guy, Chaim Schnitzler from Williamsburg, he calls me up. He says, Rabbi Krohn, I'm sitting here in the hospital with my father. That's my father's grandfather. That's my great-grandfather. Where did you get the story? We're sitting and crying. We can't believe the world will never forget our Zayda. Amazing. And then this past Shabbos, I met another Einikol of the Chabar Rav. It's amazing. How did these things happen? Because the Eibishter sees that people are so dedicated to mitzvahs that the Eibishter made it, that the Satmar Rebbe should put it, and that they should be able to see it. Then we go in Majdanek to where the people were, where they were gassed. Now, you cannot imagine what it is to stand in a room and see the cyclone gas. It's still on the wall, the purple cyclone gas. It's still on the wall. And these are the siphons from where everything came out. And you're standing there, and you just can't believe this is where they were killed. In very tight rooms, they got showers, and then the gas came. And I said to everyone, close your eyes for a minute and think, what was it like to be in this room? As they realized that they were not walking out of here like we're going to walk out in 5 minutes. And they realized that it was the end. How many people cried out Shema Yisrael as they never did before? And I say to everyone, let us say Shema Yisrael. Let us say Shema Yisrael like we never said it before. But before we say it, I want to tell you a little story. And again, this I have underlined in my Siddur. It's an amazing story that happened with Rabbi Chanan. Rabbi Chanan told over the story. It actually happened with the son-in-law, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Levinson, the son-in-law of the Chavetz Chaim. He was the Mashgiach in Raden. And one day he goes over to his Shver, and he says to the Chavetz Chaim, you know, I'm the Mashgiach here for many years, I want to leave, because I'm not making progress in my own learning. You can understand the guy who's a Rebbe or is a Mashgiach, and he spent so much time with the Bochrim, but he's not learning himself. So the Chofetz Chaim, his father-in-law, says, I paskin for you that you must stay. You cannot leave the yeshiva. You cannot leave the yeshiva. And he says, I want to tell you why you can't leave the yeshiva. He says, first of all, because the future of Klal Yisrael is in these Bochrim, and you're helping mold the future. But listen to what he said, how he teached something in Chumash. You'll never forget it. Again, underline it tonight if you haven't davened Ma'ariv or before Krishma Lamita. Listen to this. He say, we say in Krishma, V'yahavta eis Hashem aleikecha b'chol avovcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyadecha. That you have to love Hashem with your whole heart and your whole soul. What does b'chol miyadecha mean? Most people type b'chol miyadecha with all your possessions, all your money. So the Chofetz Chaim says to his son-in-law, what about money? You don't care about money. You don't have any money. You don't care about possessions. What are you thinking about when you say b'chol miyadecha? You certainly can't mean money. You certainly can't mean possessions, because it means nothing to you. So what are you thinking? He says, I'll tell you what you should be thinking. And tonight, look it up in the Ramban, in Veschanon, because in Veschanon, where it says Shema. You know what the Ramban says? Two words. Ma'oid, ma'oid. That's amazing. You know what he means? Vatam rav, rav. That's what the Ramban adds. Anything that is special. What does ma'oid mean? Very. Anything that's very in your life. What is the thing that you love most? Whatever is very in your life, whatever is ma'oid, that's what you have to be willing to give up for the sake of Hashem. That's the pshat. Whatever is important in your life, you have to be willing to give it up. L'shem Shemayim. Zok, the Heilige Chofetz Chaim, to son-in-law. What's more important in your life? Torah. That's what you have to give up. That's why you have to stay in the yeshiva. Your Torah, which is your ma'oid. There's nothing in your life that's more ma'oid than Torah. That's what you have to give up for the sake of Hashem, for the sake of future of Klal Yisrael. And then I said to the people, now we're going to say Krishma. Now we're going to say Krishma and understand that it's not a question of money and it's not a question of possessions. It's a question of what is so chashuv in your life. You're willing to give it up. I can't tell you what that Shema is. I can't tell you the crying. I can't tell you what it is to walk out of there. You walk out of there. You are drained, mamish. After the Umschlag plots and after Rav and after going through the barracks and standing under the siphons, you are a different person. You come back with a different perspective, what life is all about, what living is all about, what every day is all about. Okay, I know, you know, we usually go in the summertime, July. This year, because the Agudah convention wasn't Thanksgiving weekend, we went Thanksgiving, it was already cold. One year I went in January. I would never, ever go back in January. Now, of course, it's very selfish not to go in January. But when you are freezing with your boots and your scarf and your gloves and your triple socks, and think what it was for those brothers and sisters of ours that stood out there in like little thin cotton uniforms. And I had to stand out there in hours in that freezing cold. You can't believe it. And we're complaining because the bus parked 2 blocks away. Right? We're going to be on the bus in 10 minutes. No, but how could it be 2 blocks away? We're freezing. So what was it for them? All of a sudden, life is totally, totally different. So now let's go back a little bit to the lighter part of the trip. And we go to the Chayza of Lublin. The Chayza of Lublin, and the reason that he was called a Chayza, because he could look at you and talk to you maybe for a minute or two and just look right through your brain and see what you're all about. And so many times the people would come to the Chayza and ask him for something. He says, that's not what you want. Tell me what you really want. I know what you want. You just ask him because you think that's the right thing to ask for, but what do you really want in life? And the Chayza, when we stand by the Chayza, I always tell them this expression from Rabbi Yerucham. And the expression is, Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch used to say, it's very important for every person to know their faults so they know what they have to correct. But it's even more important to know your milos, to know your virtues, to know what you could accomplish. And that's fabulous. It's very important for each and every one of us to know our faults so we know what we have to correct. But it's even more important to know what our talents are so we can know what we can accomplish. Because life was not meant to feel rotten. And life was not meant to feel depressed. Life was meant, you were brought here, every one of us was brought here to accomplish. So that when you leave this world, people will have to say, you know something? When he was in this world, he made it a better place. That's what you were here for. But if you're constantly thinking of what you're doing wrong, that's not what it's all about. That's not what Rabbi Yerucham teaches us, and that's not what the Chayza wanted. Now, in Lublin, when the Chayza came, there was somebody, his name was Rabbi Eisel Acharef. He was not so happy with Hasidim. He didn't like that Lublin became the biggest Hasidish center, the most Hasidim more than any place else. He was a Litvish Talmud Chacham, and he once said to the Chayza, he called him and he said, listen, you know nothing. Why don't you tell your Balabatim what you really are? Tell them, Shalosh Shudas, that they're going to the wrong place. They shouldn't be coming to you because you're not Moritz. He said, you're so right. That's exactly what I'm going to do. So the next Shalosh Shudas, the Chayza got up. He says, Rabbeisai, you're making a mistake. You think I'm something. I'm nothing. I don't know anything. And the next Shabbos, even more people came. He said, he's so humble. He's so special. So Rabbi Eisel Acharef, so it's not working that way. So he says to him, come here, I'll tell you what. No, now you got to tell everybody how smart you are, that you're a big Talmud Chacham, that you know everything. He said, listen, I'll say anything you want, but I can't lie. So I'm not going to say it, because it's just not true. Now, we know that Chassidish Rebbes always have a kind heart, always to say wonderful things about other people. So the Chayza heard that there was a man who was standing outside the mikveh and he was selling combs for those people who had to comb their hair or their beards after they got out of the mikveh. So the Chayza said, well, that's such a beautiful thing that he sells combs. So Rabbi Eisel Acharef heard that and he said, what is he talking about? You know what the Gemara says about David HaMelech? David HaMelech said that when I was in the mikveh, I was worried. I had no mitzvahs whatsoever. And then I remembered that I have a bris milah, so I was happy. So Rabbi Eisel Acharef said, why couldn't David say I could sell combs? Right? Was he worried in the mikveh? He has no mitzvahs. He could have sold combs. So they went and they told that to the Chayza. So the Chayza smiled and he said, tell Rabbi Eisel Acharef, he forgot a Rambam. The Rambam says that when the king goes to the mikveh, nobody's allowed to go there with him. Because it's not sneer, so there'd be nobody to sell combs to, so he didn't sell combs. So there's light stuff, and there's heavy stuff on the trip. That's what makes it so beautiful. And then there's a great vort. The Chayza had a Talmud who once said a fabulous thing. I don't know how we're going to finish all this tonight. You got to come on the trip. Come on, July 4th weekend. Let's all go together, right? We'll call it, you know, David Solomon. You know, you come, you video the whole thing, and it'll be great. So I'll tell you just a couple more things. I don't want to keep you too late. But, you know, there's the famous vort, Ein Kiddush Ela B'Makom Suda, right? It's halacha. That when you make Kiddush, Shabbos morning, it has to be B'Makom Suda. You either got to drink a certain share of wine or have cake or hamotzi or whatever. So the Tversi Soma said like this, a gewaltige vort. He said, Ein Kiddush, a person cannot be Mekadosh himself Ela B'Makom Suda only with his mouth that he eats. In other words, there's a certain way to eat. Certain, you know, I always tell the people, I don't know why I remember this as a child. My father, Shalom, always told us that there was a sefer called Tav Yeshua. I think, or Tav Yeshua. And the Tav Yeshua said that a person, and I'm always careful with this, never drink a whole cup of soda, a whole gulp of water, all in one gulp. It's not nice. An animal drinks like that. You drink it in two sips, three sips, or whatever. Not, you just gulp it down. You know, it's not edel. So there's Ein Kiddush Ela B'Makom Suda, right? Even if you just finished a basketball game and you're sweating, you know, two gulps, that whole, you know, liter bottle of soda, okay? But the idea is Ein Kiddush B'Makom Suda. There's a certain edelkeit. So then I always tell them this story, which I love so much. It's the second story that I ever heard from Avshalom Shradron. It's absolutely fabulous. And I remember the first Friday night he told us when he was in America, he was in my parents' house, and all the people in Kew Gardens came together, and he told over this great, great story. And he told over that Rav Aaron Kalina was once sitting Matzah Shabbos by a tish, and he was saying Divrei Torah, and they served him an apple, and he made a brocha, he cut the apple, and he ate it. And people were saying, wow, what a brocha, what a brocha. And there was a little boy, Yankel, who was sitting in the back. And Yankele was thinking, like, come on, like, you know, we made a bracha. Like, you know, I also make brachas. So the Rebbe was very smart. He looked around and he sees that little boy in the back. And the boy's not so impressed. He says, Yankele, come here. I want to ask you something. Everybody's looking. What? He wants to talk to the little boy. So he whispers to Yankele. He says, Yankele, tell me, what's the difference between me and you? I eat apples and make a bracha. You eat apples and make a bracha. So Yankele says, Rebbe, I wasn't going to say anything, but I was thinking the same thing. What's the big deal? So the Rebbe said something ingenious. The Rebbe said, let me tell you the difference between me and you. He said, when I get up in the morning, the Rebbe says, I look at Hashem's world. It is so beautiful. The clouds in the sky, the sky itself, the trees, everything is so beautiful. And I want to make a bracha, but you can't just make a bracha for no reason. So I wash negavasa, and then I daven. Then after I daven, I take an apple, and I make a bracha, and then I eat it. But you, Yankele, when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you think, oh, I'm so hungry, and you want to have an apple. But as Rav Shalom used to say, David, but you know, the mama with the ois haken the tzain, if you'll eat an apple before you daven, your mother will knock your teeth out if you eat an apple before you daven. So you also wash negavasa, and you daven. And then after you finish davening, you take an apple, you make a bracha, and you eat it. So we both take apples, and we both eat it. But, listen to this, and this is genius. The Rebbe said, I eat the apple, so I should be able to make the bracha. You make a bracha, so you should be able to eat the apple. That's fabulous. The Rebbe said, I take that which is in Olam Hazeh, and I can't wait to use it, L'shem Shemayim. I can't wait to be Mekadosh it. So I eat the apple because I want to say the bracha. I want to make a connection to Hashem. You're not thinking that. You know you'll get your teeth knocked out if you don't make a bracha. So you make a bracha, but the main thing is the apple. Why do we have a car? We have a car so we could take somebody who's freezing in the morning to shul. Why do you have a house? You have a house, not only for your family, but maybe to bring in guests into the house. Why do we have money? To be able to help others who have less than us. Everything is the apples. To make a bracha, or the bracha to make the apples. That's a lesson in life, what Rav Aaron Kalina was teaching that little boy. And that's what we talk about when we go to the Chayza of Lublin, because we talk about that Ein Kiddush Ela B'Makom Suda. I mean, we could be here till midnight.
So we'll just have to save something for another time. But I do want to tell you one of the electric moments of the trip, and then we'll end with a great story. One of the electrical moments of the trip, the highlight, one of the highlights, is to come into the Beis Medrash of Lublin and to come by Rav Meir Shapiro. Now, there are many people on the trip that are usually learning the daf, and you have usually one Talmud Chacham that leads the daf every day. But Rav Meir Shapiro is a household word. And I always tell the people, what happened? How did he present the idea of the daf? Now, we know that it was at Agudas Yisrael, Kinos, everybody got together. He was a very, very young man. And he said this Gemara in Yevamos, Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. You could look it up. But he was a brilliant, brilliant darshan. And he said like this. The Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Gamliel, Pam Achasei Yisi Mahalach B'Sfina. One time I was in a boat, and I saw that there was another boat, and all of a sudden there was a storm, and I saw that that boat was going to sink, and our boat was going to sink. And I saw that on that other boat, Rabbi Akiva was there. I wanted to go and save him, but I couldn't because I had to save the people on our boat. And there was a terrible storm, and the waves were going up and down and rocking the boat, and I got the boat back to shore, and we were all saved on my boat. And then as I was walking on shore, I see Rabbi Akiva. I couldn't believe it. I went over to him and I said to him, the Gemara says, Bini, my child, Mihelcha, how'd you get up here? Didn't your boat break up? You were further out at sea than we were. Listen to what Rabbi Akiva says. Omali, he said to me, Daf shel sfina nizdamali. I had a daf. The simple meaning of daf is like a board. It was like a raft. I held on to that raft. And b'chol gal v'gal, every wave that came over me, I bobbed and weaved my head until I was able to get to shore. So the Halakha of Rav Meir Shapiro, that is a deeper meaning. You know how he survived? Daf. I held on to that daf. I held on to that daf. B'chol gal v'gal, every wave of materialism, every wave of immorality, every wave of secularism was coming against me, and I bobbed and I weaved, but I held on to the daf. And that's how I survived. And that's how Rav Meir Shapiro presented the idea of the daf. Because when a person holds on to the daf every day, then he's going to be able to make it through the rough times, to the rough waves which we face. And I tell them, how did it come? How did it happen that he thought of this idea? Listen to this story, and then we'll review, and we'll end with a fabulous story. What a great, great lesson this is. Where Rav Meir Shapiro was a little boy when he was 9 years old, he had a tutor. And this tutor would come every day to learn with this little genius. But then his parents decided they're going to move to another area far away where the tutor couldn't come. So they had to get a new tutor. So they called the tutor in the new area and they said, we're coming 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Make sure you're there because Meir has to learn. And for whatever reason, the signals got crossed and they mixed it up and the tutor did not come. That night, late at night, Rav Meir Shapiro's mother was sitting and crying. And the little boy went over to his mother. He said, Mama, was Vainsta, why are you crying? And she said to him words that he never forgot. He said, a day of learning that's lost can never be made up. A day of learning that's lost can never be made up. And that was the seed in his head of never losing a day of learning. Now, many, many years later, he proposed it. And Rav Hirschsprung once said to Rav Avram Osband, the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells in Riverdale, he said, you know who really carried through the Daf Yomi? It was Rav Meir Shapiro who proposed it, but it was the Ger Rebbe, who the first night of that winter, or first night of Rosh Hashanah, he said, tonight we're going to start Daf Beis and Brachas, and hundreds of Chevra and Ger, they all had printed Daf Beis, and everybody learned it, and that was the way that it started, because thousands of Ger Chassidim started learning Daf Beis and Brachas. And you know what happened? Rav Osband told me that Rav Hirschsprung told him, because he was a Talmud in Lublin, that Erseres Yemei Tshuva, Rav Meir Shapiro, got a letter from his sister. And his sister writes, you know, the first night of Rosh Hashanah, I had a dream of our mother. I've never dreamed of her before. And I dreamt that she was in the Olam HaEmes, and there was a crown on her head. And I don't know why I dreamt all of a sudden the first night of Rosh Hashanah about our mother who has passed away so long ago. And now I suddenly dreamt that she had a crown on her head. And Rav Meir Shapiro understood
as Rabbi Avraham Osband explains. You know why she had the crown on her head? And you know why she had the dream the first night, Rosh Hashanah? Because that's when the daf started. And Rav Meir Shapiro was Marzir Atorah L'Yeshna. He brought back the crown of Torah, and it started on the first night of Rosh Hashanah. And it started because he got the idea from his mother. His mother, who said, one day of learning that's missed can never be made up. What an influence that is on Chinuch Habonim. Absolutely incredible. Now there's just, again, how am I going to go explain what does it mean to be by Soros Shneur's Kever on a Motzei Shabbos? It's absolutely incredible. Rav Chatzkel Sarner, Rav Shiva of Chevron, once got together with a whole group of Talmid HaChacham and he said, who was the greatest Maritz Torah in the last 100 years? Somebody said the Chavetz Chaim, he said no. Somebody said Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, he said no. Somebody said Rav Meir Shapiro, he said no. They said who? He said Soros Shneur. And they all said, you're right. Now I'm telling you, we go to Soros Shneur's Kever Motzei Shabbos, and we talk about Chinuch and Chinuch Habonis. Every single one of us here tonight is only here because our wives allow us to be here. And every single one who has ever learned in a kollel, it's only because your wives went out to work. And all the girls that are getting married and helping their husbands learn, whether it's for 1 year, 2 years, or whatever amount, it's the wives. It all starts with Soros Shneur. And the bechias and the crying that we talk about davening for your children and grandchildren and the chinuch habonim that night at Soros Shneur Motzei Shabbos is out of this world. It's literally also one of the highlights of the trip. And then I tell them a story that happened right here in Muncie. You wouldn't believe it. The most amazing story. About less than a mile from here, there's a great couple named Chani Levy and Moshe Levy. Chani Levy has learned sign language. And I know that many drushes that I've gone to, she was there signing for the deaf people. A tzadikas mamash. Now, Chani and Moshe, when they got married, they're both Balei Tshuva, they decided they will not name their children after any of their relatives because they were not from. So they have a son Avigdor, and they have a son Moshe, and Shlomo Zalman, and Esther, you know, all the Heiligen names, either in Tanakh or of great people. Now, they were expecting their sixth child, and they decided they're going to name this child, if it's a girl, Tirza. Why are they going to name her Tirza? Because Tirza was one of the B'nai Slavchad, and Tirza loved Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara Bava Basra says. Slavchad. They all loved Eretz Yisrael. So she wanted, and Tirza in Yiddish means to be bavilik, to be wanted and accepted. So they decided they're going to name the baby Tirza. 2 weeks before the baby is born, his grandmother, Moshe's grandmother, dies. What was her name? Sarah. She was not from. How in the world, if he has a girl, is he not going to name the baby Sarah? What's his mother going to say? You're not naming after my mother? She just died. You have so many children already. You can't name Sarah after my mother? So she knew they would say that, if it's a girl. So they decided, if it's a girl, they're going to name her Sarah Tirza. And sure enough, it was a girl. And they named the baby Sarah Tirza. The oldest girl is in a Beis Yaakov of Muncie. And a few weeks later is the yard site of Soros Shneur. So I think at that time, I don't know if it was Representative Soloveitchik, who was the principal at that time, whoever it was at that time, says to the girls, do you know what year Soros Shneur died? And she tells them 1935. And she writes down the Hebrew date of 1935. You know what it is? Tof Reish Tzadik Hey. Tirza. Do you know what's on the kever of Soros Shneur's monument? I was there, I took pictures and I sent it to them. Sarah Tirza, right there. Could you believe it? Sarah, right, that's her name, and she died in Tof Reish Tzadik Hey. That's Tirza. It's unbelievable. You can't even make that up. So I guess if you want to review, you'll have to watch the film. You know, we'll go over it. But I just want to end just with this story. And this is an amazing story. And this is really the crux of what we came here for tonight. Rav Michal Ber Weiss Mandel was a great Talmud Chacham, Rosh Yeshiva of Nitra, a genius, a tremendous gadol. He never lost 5 children in Europe and a wife. And he came after the war, he came to America and he moved to Mount Kisco and he had 5 more children. The 5th one was a boy. And at the bris, this is what he said. And when the Satmar Rebbe heard what he said, the final punchline, the Rebbe cried, and believe me, it's worth crying about. Listen to what he said. He said, I had 5 children on the other side, and they died, Al Kiddush Hashem. I hope that the five children that I have here in America, they will live al Kiddush Hashem. And he said like this. He said, now I have a new pshat, an understanding in Kedusha. Every day when we say Kedusha, we were created in this world. Why? To live al Kiddush Hashem. But they died al Kiddush Hashem. So he says like this. That's the pshat. Nekadesh eshimcho ba'olam. Let us all be Mekadesh Hashem's name in this world. Keshem shemakdishim oisoy b'shmei marayim. Just like those who died al Kiddush Hashem. They were Mekadeshem Shemayim. And then v'koro zeh el zeh v'yomar. We will be able to call to them, and they could call to us, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. We always call those people who died al Kiddush Hashem Kadoshim. They are Kadoshim. But they have to be able to look at us and see that we are also Kadoshim. And that's what I tell the people at the Umschlagplatz, when all the names are on the wall. Take a look at that wall and find your name. And then you'll see, they died al Kiddush Hashem. Our achrayas, our nesoyin, our obligation is to live al Kiddush Hashem. Maybe she should help that each of us should learn from this trip that we've taken tonight together, that we're connected to the past, but that's going to prepare us for the future to live lives so that the Abishah should be proud, Klal Yisrael will be proud, and we'll be zeicha to see Mashiach in our time. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.